Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Our first hour this December 1st explores a pair of smart TV product distributed services. One a few weeks old, the other ready to take a big leap. Swerve Sports began mid-November with a catalog of sports-centric material. Chief Executive Steve Shannon joins me next. Earth XTV has ambitions to be the Netflix or HBO Max of all content environments. Former Ride TV founder Michael Fletcher leads the venture's new leadership team, and you'll hear from Fletcher next half hour. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist is taking its final bow today as a holiday movie on the Roku channel. Our second hour begins with Zoe's creator and executive producer Austin Weinberg in an internet radio exclusive. And how's this for a wrap? Betty Brandt and Kyle Richards, co-stars of The Housewives of the North Pole, coming to Peacock next Thursday. Also ahead, Bill Gates undertakes a smart TV series, News Note Quickies, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Gurgle, and Reason. This just in on this December 1st, 2021, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. And if you want to save and make a big run with your subscription for the first 3 months at $5.95 a month, a big savings, well, take a look at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Happy to have you aboard to kick off December with a special two-hour live edition of the program on TV's current and future. We have a great lineup in store for you, and we want you to be involved in any and all of our guests. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, and you dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And looky here, our chat room is back. The gremlins have gone away, hopefully permanently, and our chat room is here for you. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, following your source, unseemly live with you. Steve Shannon from Swerve TV and Swerve Sports joins us live from Santa Barbara, California, after these news notes. Former Microsoft Chief Executive Bill Gates is taking a TV series dip. How to Avoid a Climate Disaster will become a 10-episode unscripted program on Wondurium, an educational smart TV service that we profiled in this program earlier this year. Gates, who wrote the book, will appear on the series as a commentator and participate in another Wondurium program, documentary special Solving 4-0. Both projects are on Wondurium's 2022 lineup. Get ready for Oscar-winning director Alfonso Cuarón's first television series. Name, disclaimer, type, thriller. Co-stars Kate Blanchett and Kevin Kline. Apple TV Plus will offer disclaimer, the first entry in a multi-year content creation deal with Cuarón. The helmer of Roma, Gravity, and Children of Men will write and direct each episode of Disclaimer, which is based on the best-selling book by Renee Knight. Now some quickies before our first guest. Anne Rice's Lives of the Mayfair Witches books will be turned into an AMC series. 8 episodes were ordered. Hotel Mumbai and Slumdog Millionaire star Dev Patel now has his own production venture. Minor Realm will develop both TV series and theatrical movies. Trevor Noah will be back hosting the Grammy Awards on CBS next year. Controversial yoga master Guru Jagat and his Kundalini practice is the subject of Breath of Fire, an HBO Max docuseries set for 2022. And Nickelodeon will dish out some holiday gifts 1 week from tonight on Treasure Truck, a one-shot game special. Xavier Woods, one of WWE's New Day's tag trio, will host. And that's News Notes for now. And joining us live from Santa Barbara, California, an exclusive, former Roku executive, now the person behind Swerve TV and its channel, Swerve Sports, which just started the Roku channel a couple weeks ago, Steve Shannon. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks, Simon. Good to be with you.
Tell us about why you decided to leave Roku and form your own venture, Swerve TV.
Yeah, well, startups are a lot more fun than big companies, for one. But I had a great time for nearly 6 years at Roku, building the content business there and the advertising business. One of the things I did while I was there was started the Roku channel, and that was a terrific experience. I mean, it just took off so rapidly and successfully, and I learned a lot in the process. And just was ready to move on and wanted to kind of leverage that experience. And so we spent, you know, a good year analyzing and trying to figure out which content verticals to go after. And you know, could really see the gap in the sports category for cord cutters. I mean, there just isn't a lot of good sports to watch if you're a cord cutter. So we're set out to solve that problem.
Well, this service is not a live, from what I understand, it's not a live event or taped event service. This is more of a all about sports show. To sort of give you a metaphor for our audience, if you love ESPN's 30 for 30 or you like the ESPN Classic, the documentaries on it, this is the kind of service for you.
That's right. We're competing with ESPN, I guess, but really that side of it, like the 30 for 30 type of it. You know, if you watch ESPN, the reality is that it's not, it's mostly not games. It's mostly analysis and you know, documentaries about athletes. And so that's what we're doing. We're competing with that part of ESPN, focused initially on the documentary side. It's all long-form, TV-oriented content, you know, fairly lean-back experience, but obviously we're not carrying NFL games and whatnot. We are fairly mainstream-focused, so it's not a lot of niche sports. We're not covering pickleball or things like that. So it is pretty mainstream in terms of the sports that we cover. We do have a documentary on axe throwing, so we'll set that one aside. But other than that, it's, you know, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, soccer, tennis, things like that. You know, just trying to find the most compelling, inspirational stories around athletes out there and make them available for people.
How much content do you have running right now on Swerve, and how is it arranged?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we have about, so far we've acquired about 170 movies. So we have a good solid library, and we're adding new stuff. And certainly those out there who have copyrights around sports content, please reach out. Swerve.tv is the website. We're using data analytics to try to inform the answer to your question. So since it's so new for us right now, we're putting content up, and we have things like more football Tuesdays, since, you know, Tuesday's a fairly dry day from a football programming standpoint. We're trying to fill that gap. And we have Friday night fights, which is, you know, a long-held history if you're into boxing or martial arts and whatnot, wrestling. You know, you can sort of fill your Friday night fight Jones there. Again, it's not actual fights. It's more these things like the When We Were Kings documentary about Muhammad Ali and things like that. So we tried various programming stunts and marketing maneuvers and just monitor the data and try to just keep making it better for folks. This week we're running Being Evil, which is a documentary about Evel Knievel, which is doing really well. And so that's a fun one to watch.
Swerve Sports is one of the newest smart TV services around, and it's playing right now on the Roku channel. So if you have Roku in some manner, whether it's a TV set with Roku as the operating system or a Roku device, you can get the service, which started a few weeks ago. We've got former Roku executive Steve Chen, who founded this venture. He's the chief executive officer of it. He's with us live from Santa Barbara, California, this half hour on Tamari Televised. And we're just getting started. We've got a big 2-hour store for you, our second 2-hour edition of the week. Simon Abbott with you live from New York, 49 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Steve, make the phone go, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have one more episode coming your way at our regular time, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. And then coming up next Monday, among our guests, we'll have executive producers of the new ABC comedy Abbott Elementary, which has a special premiere episode next week, then premieres on a regular basis in January. They're Justin Halperin and Patrick Schumacher. That's Abbott Elementary, the executive producers for the show, and they're with us live Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Of the content you have, Steve, how much of it is documentary films? How much of it is short subjects? How much of it is TV series? And how much are movies, scripted films?
Right, like narrative. It's right now, I would say it's about 80% documentaries about athletes, mainly about specific athletes like Cristiano Ronaldo or Tiger Woods, folks like that. Occasionally be about teams, like we have a Manchester United documentary, for example. And then about 20% of it, I would say, is TV shows some sports competition type TV shows. We have We actually have a weightlifting TV show, some strength-oriented and wrestling-oriented TV shows. So those we have a fun competition called the Grid, which is really like a strongman competition with all kinds of crazy things that these people have to do to demonstrate their strength. So we do have a couple of TV shows, but it's really primarily premium sports documentaries.
Mm-hmm. What's been the early reaction from the viewers out there?
It's been great. Yeah, we're ahead of plan. We're only on Roku so far, channel 234, easy to remember if you know how to count. We tried to get channel 1, but so we took the next three numbers, 2, 3, and 4. It's in the sports section. I think it's next to the Pac-12 network on Roku in their grid guide, the linear grid guide. But we have 10 other deals, so we are going to be pretty widely distributed coming up in the next couple of months, and I can't announce exactly which those other programs are, but it's going to be pretty widely distributed, and we'll also be adding VOD in the not too distant future. Right now it's a linear channel only.
Is it going to be non-commercial for the long haul, or at some point are you going to make an ad-supported service?
It is ad-supported. It's 100% free for everybody. There is no subscription option. Our ad load is low, though. It's about less than half the ad load of ESPN. I would say less than half the ad load of most ad-supported networks. So there's not a whole lot of ads, 7 or 8 minutes per hour total. But it's 100% free, and it will always be that way. That's our focus, is providing free sports content.
Wouldn't you see, though, that the lower ad load would be more attractive to advertisers because it would say, hey, I can get on easier. I can get there's a good chance I can be the first in a pod, or the pods will be lower or shorter in terms of ad time, rather than have to deal with networks that give you like 4 or 5 minute pods. You know, and sometimes you might know you're not the first in the pod where you're going to be running.
Exactly, it's really easy advertising inventory to sell because there's not very much of it, so your brand stands out better. And people will tend to watch the commercials because, like you say, it's not a 3 or 4 minute ad pod. It's, you know, maybe a 2 minute ad pod at the most. And so people will sit through a couple of minutes of ads. And so your brand is much more likely to get noticed. And the fact that we're pure streaming and that we don't have a traditional, you know, cable style broadcast service, you know, what that means is that we can target the ads. And because we can target the ads, you know, so for example, if someone wants just California, or they want auto intenders, or, you know, if you have a dog and you want to put a dog food commercial out there or whatever, we can target in that way. And so that makes the ad inventory much more valuable. It's worth roughly double what a traditional ad slot would be available on TV. So because we're getting double the money, we can run with just half the ads.
Mm-hmm. I understand that among the documentary films you have, one that a lot of people may know called Women Were Kings, dealing with Muhammad Ali and one of his biggest fights. You also have one about a rugby team that was involved in the Olympics. Talk about titles you have.
Right. When We Were Kings, and the other one you're talking about is Murder Ball, which is actually wheelchair rugby. It's a fascinating documentary. It got nominated for Best Documentary the year it came out, I think. It's not very old, maybe 2018 or something like that. But it's a fairly new Oscar-nominated documentary, Murder Ball. You know, I don't cry a lot, but that one's a tearjerker. I was literally welling up watching Murder Ball. Fantastic. And then When We Were Kings is epic. It's a famous documentary that we have exclusively for free ad-supported period for some windows. And it's another amazing documentary. So that's what we do, is we hunt and scour for the best, the most premium documentaries that we can find. And we get some quirky, interesting stuff too, you know, just to experiment and see what will work out there. But it's fun to watch and experiment with, and, you know, learn about some of these inspirational stories that are really pretty mind-blowing out there.
What kind of a road has it been for you, Steve, to get the content together? Are you finding that it's a challenge to get the rights to show these films or show these programs? And what about people coming to you, for example, and saying, well, you know, I have this show, maybe I had in syndication, like American Gladiators, for many years, and
yeah.
now it's not long, it's not on TV anymore, so you're a great vehicle to revive it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of inbound since we launched, and so that's really helped a lot. I mean, that what you say there is the task at hand, which is just scouring the globe for interesting documentaries that are who aren't locked up or who are interested in us. Also, it's, you know, this kind of a renaissance going on in sports documentaries right now. I mean, you see it on Netflix and HBO, and so there's a huge amount of money going into documentary production. And, you know, those shows are only there for a year or two, and then they become available to the likes of us for licensing. So, you know, there are about 10,000 different sports documentaries that we've identified out there. So there's a lot of content, and there's really a lot being made. So it's a very rich vein to mine. And as far as I know, we're the only company focused on it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before an interest in competition shows. In the 60s and 70s, there were a lot of interesting syndicated competition programs, whether it was in the golf level, Big Three Golf, All-Star Golf, Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, with Shell backing it for many years, with some of the greatest golfers of the time, including Arnold Palmer and Gary Player, and so forth, as well as shows that were involved in other sports, celebrity bowling, celebrity billiards, celebrity tennis, and so forth. Have you been trying to get the rights to those programs and maybe bring them onto your schedule?
Yes. We not so much the celebrity stuff. At least we haven't looked into that. We should probably give that a try, see if people are interested in, but really staying focused on actual sports where the competition is fierce. With highly talented types of athletes, but absolutely some of those competition shows are interesting. We're also trying to get, you know, a lot of our stuff is older, but as we grow and are able to spend more money in our programming is becoming more modern and also more likely to be exclusive over time. So we're trying to find exclusives. We're trying to find, you know, modern stuff. But when we find, you know, world-class documentaries like When We Were Kings or Murder Ball, we'll take those all day long. And same with the TV shows. The Grid is doing well, which is, I mentioned earlier, is a kind of a strength competition. It's really fun to watch.
I'll throw in another one, Championship Bowling, which I've seen some episodes on YouTube, or Make That Spare, which was an ABC show that was on after the Fights of the Week in the early 60s. So it's a couple of other ones. I understand one of the long-term things you do want to do is to commission original material. Has that process started, and what kind of material would you like to have?
Yes, we will be doing that. I think our first original will be probably a news analysis show, you know, a little bit like a Sports Center competitor type of thing. So that won't be a documentary, but we'll start putting some money out there so that we can get some first run documentaries and things like that. It might take us another 9 months or a year before we're doing that, honestly, but certainly as we get bigger and stronger, we're going to push more and more into originals. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Steve Shannon. He has a brand new venture that started a few weeks ago on Roku, and it's called Swerve Sports through his new parent company, Swerve TV. And we'll talk to him later. Swerve TV may have more channels in the offering too. And soon, Swerve Sports may be popping up on a smart TV set, a smart TV device near you. Steve joins us live from Santa Barbara, California, this half hour on Smart TV Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you on the other side of the U.S. of A in New York, where it's 49 degrees at the top of the hour. If a question or a comment for Steve or many minutes with him, just call 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up in our second hour, boys, now you do not want to miss. Speaking of Roku, today, the big finale of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, a finale a lot of people didn't think a few months ago was going to happen. Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas is now playing on the Roku channel, and you will hear a live same-day interview with Zoe's creator and executive producer, Austin Weinberg. And then it finally happened. The Real Housewives series is now becoming a made-for-TV movie on Peacock next week. It's called The Housewives of the North Pole, and we will have the two stars of that film, Betsy Brandt and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills famed star Kyle Richards. They will both be with us live in our final half hour right here on Smartly Televised. So don't go anywhere. Tell your friends. Get that chat room going. I have a hunch when they show up, there's going to be a lot of questions, and that phone may be ringing too. That's all coming up in our second hour that begins at the top of the next hour. Steve, what's the long-term vision for Square Sports? Does that long-term vision, for example, include the possibility of scripted television, whether it's series or made-for-TV movies?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we are definitely going to start doing sports films that are not documentaries, so more like narrative fiction-style sports-themed films to see how that works with our base. But you know, I would say in terms of long-term vision, our goal is to compete with ESPN, but in a free way. You know, I think that these traditional networks have become so dependent on pay TV and subscription revenue that they're always going to hold back their best stuff. You know, honestly, I worry about the sports leagues. If you think about, you know, like what Dodgers did with Time Warner Cable, where they really kind of lost some relevancy in Los Angeles. They've been regaining it in recent years, but, you know, they kind of relegated themselves deep behind the paywall. And, you know, as cord cutting picks up steam and more people don't have access to the bundle, I believe that these sports leagues are going to want to go broad, you know, rather than going premium necessarily. I think it's more important for these leagues to be accessible and available to everyone. And you know, so those who are really dependent on the paywall, I expect their audiences to shrink. And services like Swerves will grow. And that's really the goal, is to become a leading free sports TV network.
What about the newer sports leagues? I'm talking about Major League Soccer, which now 25 years after it started has teams all over the place. We just had on CBS the National Women's Soccer League playoff and championship. You have now Major League Rugby, which looks like that's starting to take off. The Premier Lacrosse League. On NBC, plus you have, I think there was an indoor lacrosse league as well. It's still going on, Major League Lacrosse. What do you see as the future for those leagues or leagues like them on a Swerve Sports?
I see them on Swerve Sports, absolutely. You know, it'll take, we have to build some audience first. We're still small because we're brand new. But, you know, as we get up to the point where we have a few million uniques each month, I think that we'll start getting interest from those leagues, and we'll proudly carry any one of those that you just mentioned. Those are all great ideas. And, you know, I even expect some of the more mainstream leagues to increasingly experiment with free programming here. And, you know, sure, they could do it on YouTube, but I think they're going to be more likely to partner with folks like us who are more focused on them with a deeper partnership. So, yeah, we're excited about the future for live sports over the long run, but this year we're focused on the non-live side of it because it's just not realistic for us to really go cut deals for mainstream sports.
Mm-hmm. Your parent company is called Swerve TV. Does that suggest that down the road we may see other niche or general interest services from your organization?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we are focused on sports, but you know, we'd love to do a female-oriented sports channel, for example. Or, you know, right now we just have one channel, but the channels could become, you know, focused to specific sports, a basketball channel, a baseball channel, a football channel, things like that. That's not all laid out yet, but yes, you're right. We're going to have more than one channel over time. That's why it's set up the way it is.
On the women's sports side, I would think there's a lot of content to look at. Because you have more and more women's sports leagues. I understand there's a women's football league, both outdoor and indoor. I mentioned the National Women's Soccer League. Of course, you have the WNBA, and there may be some more women's leagues in the offering.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a good chance it'll be our next idea. It's not been done, and it's long overdue.
Mm-hmm. Steve, did you ever think during your time at Roku that Roku, as well as a number of other smart TV set makers and device makers, would become more than content carriers? They would actually be content makers. I mean, Roku now, as I said, an hour from now, we've got Austin Weinberg from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, who, guess what, got the opportunity to finish the show the way he wanted to on the Roku channel, not on NBC. You have Vizio now launching networks on an exclusive basis. Five right now. There's another one coming up called Polaris, which we had the founder of about a month ago on this program. You have Samsung is thinking that they may get into the content creation business. And you have multi-channel bundles like Tubi and others to come that are also doing it. I mean, what do you think of this expanding marketplace where both the smart TV send device makers and the multi-channel bundles that many of these services ventures carry are now getting into original content?
Yes, I would say that I always expected that. You know how you've been in this industry for a long time, Simon. I think I've been on the show at least once, maybe twice, and probably 10-plus years ago, so I know you've been around. There's just, you know, it's like watching a movie in slow motion. It's kind of like you know what's going to happen, but it just takes forever to happen. But, yes, absolutely, these platforms are in an incredibly powerful position. They are becoming the operating system for television entertainment, and television remains the biggest media platform on Earth by far, the most powerful platform from an advertiser's perspective, by far the most engaged platform. And, you know, companies like Roku are becoming the operating system for that, which puts them in a tremendous pole position to choose winners and losers, including choosing themselves as the winners by making original content and promoting it. So we always figured we would get there someday. I will say it's happening a little quicker than I thought. Like, they really are jumping in with both feet with that Quibi acquisition. And it's impressive. I've been watching the content. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. One more thing. Do you see interactivity being part of your service?
I hope so. You know, in particular, part of the advertising, really. But yes, I mean, that's another thing that's been, you know, taking forever to happen. But I've always been hopeful for it and a believer in it. It's so easy to do now at this point. The software is there. It's really just about consumer behavior being willing to you know, get into it. And I think it's mainly probably the driver outside of advertising will be social type stuff, you know, interacting. And that's the fun thing about linear, you know, it's kind of the revenge of linear or live TV, that this notion of a, like we're talking about channel 234. I mean, that's a throwback, right? Talking about channel numbers again. But the nice thing about the linear experience is everybody's watching everything at the same time. And when everybody's watching everything at the same time, you can add the social element to it, where folks can interact with each other about what it is that they're watching, even if it's not live TV, even if it's just a movie or whatever. And so, yeah, I'm very hopeful, and these platforms are certainly capable of it.
And Roku certainly is. They've been running Food Network Kitchen for several months now, since the spring. They also have run some casual games. And I have a hunch that we're going to see more interactivity, far more interactivity coming from Roku and the other smart TV set and device players in the year ahead. Again, the project is called Swerve Sports. And if you want to know more about it online, here's where you go. Swerve, SWERVE.TV. That's Swerve Sports, running on the Roku channel and soon will be running on a smart TV set or smart device for you. Once again, for all details online, SWERVE.TV. Steve Shannon, the head of Swerve Sports and parent Swerve TV, thank you again for being with us. Congratulations on your new venture. Hopefully it is going to be flying and flying in a lot of ways before all is said and done.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Steve. All the greatest to you and your crew, and have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Steve Shannon from Swerve TV and Swerve Sports joining us live from Santa Barbara, California. More tomorrow, televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Have you heard? If you subscribe to Audible.com right now, there's a great holiday treat for you. Your first 3 months can be just $5.95 a month. That's right, only $5.95 a month. So if you go to audibletrial.com/televised, it's a great way to celebrate the holidays and the year ahead for you or someone you love. Your first 3 months as an audible.com subscriber, $5.95 a month for the first 3 months. And if you don't want to subscribe yet, you can go for a one-month trial if you go to audibletrial.com/televised. And one of the audiobooks you can get is the brand new book from Will Smith himself. It's called simply Will, and that can be your book for that one-month trial. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device. including whatever you're happening to hear right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speakers and Radio, and our various podcast destinations. Remember, just sign up for the trial or sign up for that membership at audibletrial.com/televised. Just sign up for the trial. You get one free audio book. Also, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Health and wellness information while it lasts. And if you're an Amazon Prime customer, it's two audiobooks for your trial of one, and one of them can be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. For all details on both the trial and the special offer, 3-month subscription, $5.95 a month, just go to audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, to answer the question, whatever happened to the person who sold Rye TV a few months ago, and he found it? Well, Michael Fletcher is now heading a brand new project for himself, and he wants to take that project, which has been running for about a year, called EarthX TV, and make it the Netflix or the HBO Max or the Peacock of all things environmental. Michael Fletcher joins us live from Dallas after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, speakers.com, and tuning.com, your home for the best internet radio on the planet, and it reaches more than 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, VTR is your home for Kings of the Morning. Check it out tomorrow and every weekday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, a King and Crew right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour and our Big 2 Hour extravaganza on a Wednesday afternoon for tomorrow be televised. Fallon with you live from New York. If you request your comment for our next guest or our guest in the following hour, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. The last time you heard the following person on this program, he was running Rye TV, an All About Horses channel that was getting a lot of traction on cable systems and other places as well. And a few months ago, he sold Rye TV, or where Rye TV was on, to the folks behind GAC Media and GAC Family, which is headed by the former head of Hallmark Channel, Bill Abbott. Well, now, the person you're about to hear has a brand new venture he's heading. It's a venture called EarthX TV, and he's brought a whole new leadership team in to try to take it to the next level. Joining us live from Dallas, Texas, the overseer of EarthX TV, and one of the key executives now at Parrot Earth TV, or EarthX, I should say, Michael Fletcher. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Simon. Nice to be with you.
Same here, and a very happy holiday season to you and all. Why did you decide to check out EarthX TV and become its overseer?
Well, you know, I think as we were getting ready to sell Rye TV, I was introduced to a local Dallas philanthropist and businessman by the name of Trammell Crow. His family started what became the world's largest real estate company at one time, and Trammell tells me that one day he woke up and forgot to go to work and decided it was time to do something he was passionate about. So he loves the environment. He is what's known as a green Republican, and so a bit of unusual, I might say. And Trammell started about 10 years ago. He started to devote his money and time to making people aware of the environment and started this thing called Earth Day Texas, which became the world's largest gathering of environmentalists right in Dallas, Texas, of all places. And everything was going great until COVID hit, and they could no longer have a large expo, so they went virtual. And then I heard about it because someone reached out to me, and they were trying to launch EarthX TV because they had gone virtual. And it's something I care about. I care about the environment. I care about our planet. And after meeting Trammell, you know, shared his vision, so we decided to partner up and, as they say, do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to bring a number of key executives from the various Discovery channels, like Animal Planet, TLC, Discovery, with you? And with all of you together, what do you see as the next leap for EarthX TV?
Yeah, so, you know, today is absolutely the right time and the right place to be focusing on the environment. Discovery, as you no doubt recall, had launched Planet Green years ago. And even though it had really good, solid support from the advertising community, it probably was ahead of its time. And their approach to content was a bit different than EarthX TV. But I felt like this is the right time, right place. Wherever you go around the world, governments, companies, Everyone seems to be aware now that we've got to do something to, you know, stem the trend that we're on with our planet. And so for me, I wanted people who had experience in the space, were very accomplished in the television industry. So, you know, some of the folks I brought over, they had worked at Discovery for years. They were part of launching Planet Green. They understood the space, great track records, and we intend to build a very large global television channel. So it was important that I had the right team.
What is the format of EarthX TV now? How much content does it have? And let's start right there, and then we'll see how you're going to build this.
Yeah, and a good way of thinking about it, Simon, is where it was at when I landed here, started working with Trammell. We started talking back in, I think, January, seriously, about doing something together. At that time, EarthX TV was pretty much just a website with some Zoom shows. And I realized, of course, we had to have entertaining content to be able to get cable carriage and have a larger audience tune in. So we started migrating other content to the platform. We have been on a bit of a buying spree, acquiring content. My head of programming and content, Dan Russell, who did come from CuriosityStream before that Discovery, he currently has about 300 to 400 hours of content under contract that we're acquiring. We're also creating a lot of original content. So our goal is that by June of this year, we will have added about an additional 400 to 500 hours of content to our platform, which will give us a total of around 1,000 hours. It's not much, but we're continuing to build content and plan to multiply that two or three times in the next 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. How do you see EarthX differentiating itself from a service like CuriosityStream? We had, by the way, one of the key people from Curiosity on our show earlier this fall, and they're also getting into commissioning more original content. They want to do more original programming and not just get acquisitions.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we love CuriosityStream, by the way. Great channel. They do some environmental programming. So several differentiators. For one thing, EarthX is a nonprofit. Our service as a 24/7 linear channel and VOD service is free. It's free to cable operators. It's free to the public to watch. And so we are, motivated, or I shouldn't say motivated, our business plan is different because we're a nonprofit. Second, though, you know, just in terms of content, cover all 17 of the sustainability developmental goals. So we don't focus just on climate change or rainforest or a few particular things. You know, we try to cover all the subjects, the primary subjects that affect our world, and we cover the world. So we have programs that we produce down in Brazil that are about Brazil. We have programs that we produce in other countries. And we're active with other NGOs. So the way we approach our content is more global, and I would say more 360 in terms of subject matter.
EarthX TV is now running on a number of smart TV sets and smart TV devices, including Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, as well as services that have Android as the operating system, like Google TV, for example. And we are talking with the former head of Ride TV, now is the overseer of EarthX TV, Michael Fletcher. He joins us live from Dallas, Texas, where the service is based, and he joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sign up with you live from New York, light up with us for our second consecutive two-hour extravaganza in a row. We had our first one on Monday, and we thank those of you that tuned us in then for that. And if you have a question or comment for Michael, well, make that phone ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere, catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. They're both available for you. Coming up before the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We have four prizes in play. We launched the question on Monday, and we still don't have a winner, but we'd like to get one, and you could be that one if you pay attention. That's coming up near the top of the hour. And later in our next hour, in addition to our guests, I'll have some thoughts about what CBS and now Paramount Plus are going to be doing with their Thanksgiving Day parade coverage, which, once again, was a bust. We'll tell you more about that in our next half hour. In terms of commissioning original shows, what are you looking at? And are you getting some traction from people who would like to produce for your network?
We are, and we're looking for, I guess, a wide variety of genres. For instance, we are acquiring some content right now that is produced in other countries. We're trying to kind of broaden the scope from just serious environmental subject matter to environmental underpinnings or, you know, a theme that runs under it. As an example, we acquired a show out of Australia that is about a group of people that relocate animals. So it's highly entertaining, unusual personalities, characters in the show. You know, if you have a rattlesnake that enters into your kitchen and you need someone to come out and relocate it, that's what these folks do, wildlife conservation. So it's really a wide variety. We have a show that is called Kids in Conservation. It's hosted by a 10-year-old girl from South Africa, and she goes on walkabouts and talks about wildlife conservation in Africa and how that's important. And so it really does, you know, follow a broad range of everything from housing to food, you name it.
Michael, for some reason we lost Michael. Michael, if you're there, say something.
I'm here. I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear me. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I was saying that the content does cover a wide variety of genres. So documentaries, we have adventure shows, we have, for instance, a show called Kids in Conservation, hosted by a 10-year-old girl from South Africa. She shows people how important wildlife conservation is to the world. We have a program we just licensed out of Australia that's about a team that relocates animals. So, you know, if you have a rattlesnake, you have something else gets into your home, they come out, they relocate it. They're all pretty colorful characters. The show's never aired here in the United States. We also, EarthX has for years produced a film festival here in Dallas, and we'll be doing it again in 2022. So we attract all kinds of films. We've had the pleasure of showing award-winning films in the past and continue to do that. Those also will air on our channel. So it's just a wide variety of content.
Yeah. Same question I asked Steve Shannon our last half hour with his venture, Swerve Sports. Do you see a role near-term or long-term for scripted television, whether it is series, scripted series or made-for-TV movies?
We absolutely do. You know, we believe that we want as much content that has environmental underpinnings as possible on as many platforms as possible. So we do co-productions. We have, as a nonprofit, we have donated money to things like we're doing a film right now with Off the Fence Productions that is called Laudato Si. It's almost finished. It's about the Pope's, the Vatican's position on the environment. We also donated money to a play called The Way of the Rain that's about to start touring throughout the world. So we look for opportunities to co-produce, you know, different types of content, let's say, on different platforms. And in the future, we'll get into, of course, fiction and other series.
Yeah, it seems that fiction would be a great opportunity. We haven't had too many shows dealing with some way with the environment since the days of, let's say, shows like Sea Hunt or Daktari in the 1950s and 60s.
It's true. But, you know, it's interesting, Simon, like even take the hit Yellowstone. That show, when you really think about it and get down to it and follow the plot, if you're an environmentalist, it's really what that show is about. Because the Dutton family, which is all fictional, of course, but they're all about saving the environment, saving Montana, and trying to, you know, preserve an older way of life and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, coming up later this month is the prequel to Yellowstone on Paramount Plus called 1883. And incidentally, everyone out there, we are trying to get the producers of that show, if not the creator Taylor Sheridan, who now is running his own empire of Paramount Plus shows. The latest one, Mayor of Kingstown, is one of Paramount Plus's new hits. And we'll try to simply get him at some point, and if not him, one of the producers of 1883, which I believe comes out December 17th, December 18th, middle of the month, on Paramount Plus. And they may do a run of the first two episodes, as they did with Mayor of Kingstown, on Paramount Network, which is available on cable and satellite. So it's interesting you see fiction scripted series, scripted movies as part of the deal. I understand that one of the people that you brought aboard on your executive team is James Levitt, and he's going to be handling global advertising sales. It sounds like you do want to get sponsors and advertisers involved in your network. How so?
Yeah, we do. We're looking for companies, corporations that have, you know, that have a sustainability program to kind of put their money where their mouth is and help us produce content. Because 100% of whatever revenue we generate from advertising and sponsorships on the network will go right back into sustaining the operation and creating content. And Jamie, you know, spent 21 years at Discovery. I hired him to run our sales at Ride TV, and he worked for me a couple of years over there and built a team, and now that team is focusing on EarthX TV. And I've got to say, Simon, that, you know, in terms of distribution, you're correct that today EarthX TV is on all of these OTT platforms, but we also are in the process of launching on linear. I'll be able to announce some deals within the next 60 days or so, but you will see us on cable and satellite here in the U.S., as well as we have commitments overseas to launch in the U.K. and other parts of Europe.
Yeah. I want to say, going back to advertising for a second, do you see maybe advertisers as content creators as well? I know Procter & Gamble wants to get back in a big way into TV content making. There's some other advertisers or ad agencies that are looking at that too. So I'm wondering if that's being explored as well.
It is, for sure. You know, we are somewhat careful about the partners, advertising partners that we create deals with. We do want to reward companies that are trying to increase their sustainability focus. And so just because a company maybe is only 20 or 30% of the way of where they want to go in terms of reducing their carbon footprint or sustainability, that's okay with this as long as they're trending in the right direction. But we are opposed to what's called greenwashing, and so we're a little bit careful about the advertisers that we partner with, but certainly looking to reward good behavior.
Yeah. A number of years ago, Animal Planet did a game show that ran for Sirius, hosted by J.D. Roth, who we had on the show a number of years ago with his production company. J.D. is a great host and a great producer. Wonderful example of growing up with television. Any possibility of a game show or a competition show?
You know, absolutely. In fact, we do have a game show planned, and we'll introduce it next year. I don't want to give it away, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And definitely we are right now acquiring a program that is a bit of a, I wouldn't say a survivor, but it's something similar to that. And we're developing a show right now that is very action-oriented in the ocean. It's a bunch of former combat operatives, military operatives, who now patrol the oceans and try to, you know, help clean up plastics and that kind of thing. It's a nonviolent show, but it's really a great program.
Mm-hmm. Michael Fletcher is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised from Dallas, Texas. He is now the overseer of EarthX TV, which is the environmental-oriented television service running on smart TV sets and smart devices, as you heard, very soon on linear television. The Linear Television Network as well, so we'll keep you posted on how that is going. And Michael's with us for a few more minutes from Dallas, Texas, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. No question or comment for him? Well, get your fingers going on that phone and make that call happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming your way next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests will be executive producer of the new ABC comedy, Abbott Elementary. First episode premieres next week, then the rest come on starting in January. We'll have executive producers Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher. And then next Friday on Tomorrow We Tell, as among our guests, we'll have the author of a very interesting book called The Inside Secret of Sesame Street. And she's also an expert on where children's television is at and where it is going. Her name is Dr. Lucille Burbank. You'll meet her next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Again, stay tuned. Patrick's trivia question coming up in a few minutes. Michael, contrast what you did building up Ride TV from scratch to where you are now, where you and your executive team are jumping into a network that's already around, and you're trying to take it to where you want your vision to go.
So, you know, the first thing that happened, Simon, when I got here was the channel was really not a channel. It was a website with a Vimeo player, and it was on 2 to 3 hours a day. So we completely rebuilt it, revamped it. We partnered with a vendor and built an OTT platform, which you can go to, you know, any app store, download it. As I mentioned, it's free, and it's now 24/7 as well as VOD. So it was a little bit starting from scratch. But the great thing about EarthX compared to Ride TV is they already had a phenomenal staff here who are subject matter experts. They know the environment. They know where the issues are. And through Trammell Crow and other folks here, they have relationships around the world with both NGOs, content providers, heads of state, things like that. So in terms of being able to get the word out and be able to find content and galvanize deals, we've been able to do that very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. In the course of building up Ride TV, as you did, I'm sure there were a lot of followers who saw the channel, the All About Horses channel. Have you heard from them since you ended that experience? And the channel is now running as JC Family, JC Living by GAC Media. Have you heard from them? And any message to them about whether or not when they ask you, can Ride TV come back in some fashion? Can somebody else pick up the ball from you and bring it back?
You know, I really support what Bill Abbott and the team over there has done with both GAC, Great American Country, and with Ride TV. I think they are filling a white space that needs to be filled today. And from everything I've heard, they're having great success at it. So I'm very excited for them. Ride Television Network did fill a void for horse people, and it's a very large market. But one thing we found is that because people are passionate about horses, you know, they live with their horses every day. They're members of the family. So they didn't necessarily go home and watch it on TV at night. It was almost more of a vocation than it was just in hobby or entertainment. So is there an opportunity out there? Sure. There's a channel called Horse and Country out of the UK that is on the air and has had some success. But, you know, I know for a fact that the right place, right time for me and for our team right now is environmentally themed content. And that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. Could some of the content that you developed at Ride, could that move over to EarthX?
I don't think so. You know, we are focused just in such a different area, although there are some subjects like the wild Mustang population in what's called regenerative farming and ranching that Ride TV, you know, certainly has a relationship with. But in terms of the content itself that we created, it was more sports and lifestyle, so probably not a place for it.
Well, we'll see. And incidentally, I hope we can get Bill on the program, Bill Abbott on the program. He's been on before when he was with Hallmark Channel. And, yes, GAC is off to the races so far. They're about to launch, relaunch, actually, a series that was on Hallmark Channel now, Hallmark Movies Now, called When Hope Calls. And we hope to, which is premiering in mid-December, we hope to get Bill on or the producer of that show on to talk about where they're at. Because I agree with that. I think GAC, both GAC Media and GAC Living, which is on Great American Country, I think they have a great chance to make it. And we'll see how Bill takes the both services from there. It sounds like you're really satisfied with what you've done so far in such quick fashion.
I really am. You know, we, as I said, we've been able to line up a lot of distribution, which is huge. I've been able to put a great team together. We're acquiring some really incredible content. I couldn't be happier. We're planning right now. We do an annual expo in Dallas that in the past has drawn 180,000, 190,000 people a year prior to COVID. We're planning an event in 2022 that will be great called the Congress of Conferences. And it's going to be very entertaining and informational. But, you know, Simon, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a lifelong entrepreneur. I've never done anything like this where I've agreed to come on board something I didn't own equity in. But I love what I'm doing. It's a great place to be at this time in my life and for, you know, my kids and grandkids. And I'm excited about the future. We're going to build something really big here.
The name of the service is EarthX TV, and it's owned by EarthX, a nonprofit organization. And if you want to find out more about the service, which currently is running on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and TV sets that are smart and have the Android TV or Google TV operating system, here's where you go online, www.earthx.org. It's www.earthx.org, and we certainly will be following the progress of this service in months to come, and we'd love to have some of the original programming makers come on our show down the road as well. Michael Fletcher, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on coming aboard with your executive team with EarthX TV, and we're looking forward to covering what you're up to in times to come, and who knows, you may be fulfilling the vision of turning this service into, as I said at the top, the Netflix or the HBO Max or the Peacock, et cetera, of environmental programming.
Thank you, Simon. Certainly plan to, and stay tuned. There'll be a lot of exciting announcements along the way. Thank you for having
me. Absolutely. Let's get together, by the way, in person next time you pop into New York with your team.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome, Michael. Take care. Have a wonderful holiday and a great start to the new year.
Okay, you do the same.
Michael Fletcher, overseer of EarthX TV, joining us live from Dallas, Texas. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We launched this question on Monday, and if you're first with the correct answer, we have four, that's right, four prizes in play, just great for the holiday season. Two of them are books, the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook, based on the popular 1990s movie, which is being remade as a sequel for Disney Plus coming out next year with Bette Midler reprising her role from that film. And we've got Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life by Ray Richmond, who was on our show last month. We'll have him back, by the way, later this month to talk about the year in TV and the year to come. Also, we've got the Big Brothers T-shirt from the 2B series that started a few weeks ago. And we also have the Loud House Nickelodeon crayon set for you. That's all together if you have the answer to this question. Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Perry Mason on a CBS television series. Who was the second? Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Perry Mason on CBS. Who was the second? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you will win all those four prizes. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post a question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon. TWBT. That's UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, if you want to win, you got to play in. That's the name of the game around here. And when you do, all the very best. You are listening to Tomorrow Be Televised, special midweek edition on this 1st of December 2021. Simon will be live from New York. 48 degrees now near the top of the hour. You have a question or comment. That's, by the way, here in New York. You have a question or comment for upcoming guests. We got some big ones coming your way in the hour ahead. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, our phone number, 646-652-2906, is available anywhere you're listening to our program right now, around the world or around the USA, on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. When we come back at the top of the hour, we will bring you live an exclusive same-day interview with the creator and executive producer of the acclaimed NBC series, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which today premiered its finale episode, a holiday movie special, Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas. Austin Weinberg will be joining me and you as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for uplifting communities. That's uplifting communities. It will uplift you for sure. Tomorrow, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, that's Uplifting Communities tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Tomorrow Be Televised, the second hour of our two-hour edition, second one in a row this week. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Boy, you're in for a treat this hour. Coming up on with you live from New York, and hopefully you're about to be with us. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Some wonderful guests coming your way in this hour ahead. Coming up in the second half of our hour, joining us live, we will have the co-stars of Peacock's first ever Real Housewives movie, The Housewives of North Pole, Betsy Brand and Kyle Richards. They're both joining us live at the top bottom of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guests coming up this half hour, make a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is open and ready to hear you. So check it out. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. When Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist finished a great and acclaimed and Emmy-nominated two-year run on NBC, a lot of people were wondering, would this show ever complete the way its creators wanted to? Well, today, that answer is now around. A brand-new special made-for-TV movie called Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas. And it involves the next guest you're about to hear. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us live in an inter-radio exclusive, the creator, executive producer of Zoe's, Austin Weinberg. Austin, congratulations and welcome to our program. And Austin, are you there?
I am here.
There you are. And where are you calling us from, Austin?
My cell phone. No, in Los Angeles.
Austin, it's great to have you with us. And I got to ask, did you think when NBC canceled your acclaimed series after two seasons that you would ever get a chance to finish your vision the way you wanted to and do it on Roku?
I refuse to believe that that was the end. It all happened in it was like a gut punch to us when it happened, and nobody saw it coming, and we just weren't ready for it to be over, and we refused for it to be over, and the fans refused for it to be over, and we were winning all these polls, and they started this Save Zoe's Twitter campaign that was trending, and I think we all just believed that somebody else would have an appetite for it and want to help us continue telling the story. And I didn't know Roku would be the place at the time, but I kind of just refused to believe that it was over.
The head of Roku's scripted programming, Colin Davis, sent a press release that your program was the kind of show that doesn't just entertain people. This is an exact quote. It speaks to them. Here's what he said, and I quote, "This show has a healing power about it, which is brought to life by the incredibly talented cast through music and dance. That connection with the audience is what makes bringing a holiday-themed film like Zoe to life with the original cast so special." How do you describe that healing power?
How do I describe it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the show is about a couple of different things, and one of the things the show is about is how do we navigate grief. And the whole first season of the show was about Zoe losing her father. It was very personal to me. It was based on what happened to my own dad. And every story that we told in that first season was literally something that was kind of pulled from the headlines of my own house. And so the first season was all about dealing with the upcoming death and what it's like with caregivers and hospice and the day-to-day maintenance of somebody who's slowly dying and being trapped in their own body. And then, by the way, this is during a musical that's a comedy and joyful as well. And then season two was about how do we carry on after death. And now the movie is about, you know, what is the first holiday like when that person who was so loved and so important to you is gone. So I think one of the things about the healing power of the show is kind of a collective thing for everybody who's navigating grief or who has ever lost anybody in their lives, shining a light on what that feels like and the grieving process and how we can find love and hope and joy even through grieving and mourning, and kind of trying to be true to my own authentic feelings and emotions that I was going through during that time. I think the other big thing about the show in terms of healing is so much of the show is about empathy and compassion and using music, which is universal, stories about what's going on in people's heads and in their hearts. And Zoe, our main character, who's not that equipped or good at navigating people in the beginning, learning how to open herself up. And so I think for her, this power is healing for her because it's teaching her how to get in touch with her own emotions and the emotions of others, and also it was giving her a window into being able to talk to her dad while he was slipping away. So I think, you know, I sometimes I've described the show as a collective hug for America. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but I think it also came along at a time where a lot of people were dealing with loss and dealing with loss because of COVID. And I think that there is something universal about what we all go through and what we all feel in times of grieving and death.
Also, there's two incredible things about this situation. One is the road it took to get this show back on and make it a holiday finale. And then within a space of 4 months from deal to today to get the program produced, get the original cast back, get everybody on board, and do the program wherever you did it still in a pandemic situation.
Correct. It was absolutely insane and something I would never recommend to anybody.
Mm-hmm. How did it come together? How did it come together so fast?
Well, it started with Roku just really believing in the show and loving this idea of doing some sort of holiday movie. And I had gone to them, kind of pitched them a notion, a few lines of what I thought it could be, mainly just dealing with this idea of first Christmas without dad, and what does that look like? And, you know, what is that first holiday like for anybody that's lost a loved one? And they greenlit it off of that notion, I believe, on July 22nd. And then I had 2 weeks with two other writers from the show, Sam Laybourne and Samantha McIntyre, where we just kind of mapped out the story of the movie and what that could actually look like and be and what the songs might be and navigating holiday songs versus pop songs and, you know, different storylines and different threads. And there was a lot of mandates and things we were trying to accomplish with the movie. First of all, we wanted to make it feel like a standalone movie and something that people could come into cold having never seen the show and still be able to enjoy it on its own terms and kind of treat it like a holiday film. And so rather than approaching it like a supersized episode of the TV show, we really broke it like a movie with a three-act movie structure. But the other challenge was also season two ended on a couple big cliffhangers, one in particular, and I felt like it was important for the fans to still carry on the thread that would have continued into season three. And then the last piece of it was to make sure that it felt close-ended and to give it some sort of closure for the series in general, but also leave it open-ended enough at the end that if there was an appetite for more, that we could still keep going. So it was a very thin needle to thread. And then after those 2 weeks with the writers, I had 1 week by myself to write the outline, another week and a half to write the script. We then had 2 weeks of pre-production. And you got to remember, during all this time pre-production, it's not just like sets and wardrobe. It's also getting all the musical numbers ready and getting all the song rights and getting Harvey Mason Jr., our music producer, to create our own demo tracks. And then having Mandy Moore, our choreographer, figure out how to do these massive dance numbers all within the span of like 2 weeks. And then the cast, we had to get all those contracts done. Then we had a little over 3 weeks to shoot the movie. And then we had like 2 to 3 weeks of post-production. And then here we are. So, you know, we really made an entire movie in less than 4 months, and we're really proud of it. But, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is that it does feel like a movie. It doesn't just feel like an episode of the show. And it's pretty mind-blowing that somehow moving all these pieces around and figuring it all out within a span of moments, we were able to pull it off.
You're hearing Austin Weinberg. He is the creator and executive producer of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, the Emmy-nominated series that ran a two-season run on NBC. And starting today, a very special holiday finale called Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas is now playing on the Roku channel, available on Roku, available on some smart TV sets and devices, wherever you are. Austin joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. Interview exclusive interview right here on Tomorrow will be televised. Tom, I'm with you from the other side of the USFA. That's wherever you are. Right now it's 48 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Austin, don't be shy. Make that phone go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And if you missed our episode, another two-hour extravaganza on Monday, which includes an exclusive interview with Sissy from Family Affair herself, Kathy Garver, well, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out our podcast. They're available on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, as well as TuneIn.com, Verbal, Reason, other places as well. We're also on Apple TV and iTunes as well. And also on that episode, you can also check out the executive producer and creator of Lost in Space, the Netflix revival, which today started its third and final season. And we had Zach Efron on the program. Again, that's on our show Monday, check it out at blogtalkradio.com/televised and our various podcast sites. Austin, for you, what was the most special part of putting this, what may be the last Zoe's episode together?
I think it was just the fact that, you know, when NBC canceled the show in May, I spent a lot of June really mourning it. You know, this show was my entire life for the last 3 years, and beyond it just being a TV show, it was so personal to me because of what it was about, and also checking all the boxes of things that I love with comedy and drama and musicality and all of that stuff, and I just kind of couldn't believe that it was over. So for me, the greatest joy of doing it again was just to bring everybody back to, you know, for ourselves get a little bit more of potential closure. And to just, I think everybody came into the movie just so grateful that we got this opportunity and were so appreciative of the fans, because we really did feel like the fans were what got us there. And, you know, I think we really just, we all tried to bring our A game, and I think we really cherished the whole experience. So I think a lot of times when you're doing a series, you know, you can get really bogged down in the stress of it all, and it feels like it's never ending. And we also were shooting the show in Vancouver, and we had to quarantine for 14 days each time we would go there. So we were away from our friends and family for months and months and months. And it was definitely very challenging. And I think we were all just so grateful to be back. So I think that's my biggest takeaway.
Mm-hmm. How did Jane Levy and all the members of the cast, how did they go through their paces for this movie?
Like, how did they – what does that mean? I'm sorry.
How did they relate to each other coming back one more time before the cameras to do this? The completion that they feel and you feel that the audience deserved.
I think everybody felt the same way. I think, you know, it was daunting. I mean, they literally had 4 days of prep before we started shooting, and that's 4 days to record all their songs, to learn all their musical numbers, to get all their hair to wardrobe fittings, to do all their camera tests. So they didn't have a lot of preparation time before we jumped into making the movie. But I think everybody just went in being like, you know, thank God we get to do this, and we're going to have as much fun as we can while we're doing it. And I think that Jane, you know, she so embodies Zoe. Zoe lives so much in her, and she's such an instinctive actress and so smart, came in ready to play. And we talked about her character's emotional arc and journey in the movie, and her and Skylar, I think, finally being able to be in a real committed relationship in the movie and not just sort of the will they or won't they, allowed them to go to deeper places. The fact that Max has the powers now in the movie meant that it allowed Jane to do a lot more musical numbers instead of just standing on the sidelines watching them. And I think she was really psyched to be able to channel her inner song and dance and really bring that to the screen. So I think everybody was just a combination of excited and grateful, honestly.
Mm-hmm. When you were developing this film, being a holiday movie and running at a holiday season, were there certain things you explored that you later on said, nope, other holiday movies do this, why should I, you know, I want to make this as distinct a movie as I can and not follow the trail of other holiday films?
I mean, thankfully, I've not seen any of the Hallmark Channel movies, so I don't know what the specific tropes are that they do in those movies. I mean, if we trekked in them, I apologize, but it wasn't intentional. I mean, the holiday Christmas movies that I know are like Home Alone and Die Hard and A Christmas Story, which I would watch with my sister every Christmas. So we were just kind of trying to make it feel like a true Zoe story and also make it true to my own experience. My dad's birthday was Christmas Day. And so Christmas was a loaded, complicated day in our house. And, you know, the first Christmas that he was gone, the kind of complicated nature of that and trying to write to the complicated nature. You know, I hadn't seen a holiday movie that was really dealing with that before, the idea of loss and what that first Christmas is like after loss. Plus, our movie is a musical. I don't know if I've seen a Christmas musical movie. You're going to tell me there's one offhand, but I couldn't think of any offhand. And, you know, I spent a lot of time listening to different Christmas songs. And so my approach to it was just trying to be authentic to the show and original to the Zoe voice, not necessarily getting bogged down in, like, what other movies do. You know, there was also a very limited time to write it, so capitalizing on the different story threads from season two and also – you know, different things that I wanted to satirize. Like, we get a million Christmas cards every year at our house from different families, and they always feel like everyone's trying to present this picture-perfect family life, and that felt like that was something that was kind of ripe for mockery in there. So that's the whole story thread that has to do with a Christmas card that's also kind of pulled from my own life.
Any Christmas songs that you felt, along with Mandy Moore and your crew, that we must do a musical number with this, we must try something different with this, or we must there's no way, no heck, that we not do this movie without this song?
It wasn't quite like that. I mean, the challenge with holiday songs in terms of Zoe's is in the show and in the movie, Zoe hears what's called people's heart songs. And that's sort of what's going on inside people's minds and the hearts, what they're feeling. And a lot of Christmas songs are like Jingle Bells or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Winter Wonderland, which are these sort of nice, happy songs about Christmas. But whenever we do a song in the show, it either needs to advance plot or reveal character or be funny or surprising in some way. And a lot of sort of kind of classic Christmas songs don't really feel like heart songs to me. So one of the challenges of finding the right holiday songs was songs that kind of spoke to an emotional need. So like, it's the most wonderful time of the year, sort of most joy about the season, or We Need a Little Christmas with Zoe desperately wanting there to be a Christmas and trying to make sure that it played into story and plot points. And I don't know if there was one specific one that we said we must do, but it was definitely like, if we are going to do them, how do we make them fun? And, you know, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year opens the movie, and it's probably the biggest, it is the biggest number we ever did. We had 400 or 500 dancers in a mall, and we shot it all in one big take without any cuts. So we kind of wanted to show people, like, we're here to play and we're not messing around. And then, you know, Mandy just never ceases to amaze me with her ingenuity, with her choreography. And we're always trying to challenge each other to come up with cool conceits and fun ways to show things. And I think, you know, We Need a Little Christmas is one of my favorite numbers we ever did.
Yeah, I remember that was the song from MAME, the Broadway show,
right,
back in 1965.
Right.
And while you were talking, I was also thinking about from the film Meet Me in St. Louis, which you see a lot in Turner Classic Movies, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which comes at a very dramatic moment with Judy Garland and Margaret Bryan,
right,
in that movie. Very, very heartfelt.
Right.
By the way, talk about the making of That Wonderful Time of the Year, because many people, they know it from Andy Williams and those Andy Williams shows, Christmas specials, and it was one of his big hit songs. What was it like to do that ambitious a production number with 400 singers and dancers and do it in one take?
You know, we had gotten pretty adept over the two seasons of the show. We'd done something like 160 musical numbers on the show. We've gotten pretty adept at doing what we, you know, these one-er shots, these long takes where we do the entire number in one take. And for Mandy, it's actually not, once she figures out what it is, it's kind of, you know, just sort of the geography of how you move people and how you move the camera, but sort of easier for us in a way, because if we can get it right, then you don't have to shoot it from a million different angles. And I never wanted the show to feel like a music video with all these editing and cuts. Kind of hate that in movies sometimes where you don't actually get to see the dance play out. And so we kind of developed a style where whenever we could do one-ers, we would do them on the show, and they would be quicker to shoot as long as we had enough rehearsal time. The challenge with that one was just, you know, we were covering a huge swath of geography. We start on the second level. We go down this escalator. We go in a train around this gingerbread house, kind of figuring out, mapping out the pattern of it, and then figuring out where to put dancers where they would be seen with the camera. That was really the big challenge of that number. And whenever we do one of those big numbers, we're all so jazzed about it on the day. It really feels like we're making this kind of live theater in a way. And we always know, everybody on the crew, the cast, everyone, which take is the right take. We got it. And it's usually by like take 6 or 7. It's pretty amazing how quickly we're able to do it.
Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, what may be the ultimate final episode of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, following a 2-year run on NBC, and I mean, we're not run on my dad for several things, including Jane Levy's performance, and Bernadette Peters' supporting performance also. Well, now, Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas is playing right now on the Roku channel, which is available on smart TV sets and some smart TV devices as well. And we've got Austin Weinberg. He is the creator of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist and the creator, writer, executive producer of this holiday finale. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tamabi Televised, and we're happy you're here as well. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on this December 1st edition of Tamabi Televised, the program about TV's current and future. If you have a question or comment for Austin or remaining moments with him, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up for the next half hour, Peacock is a week away a little bit and change from showing its first ever Real Housewives made-for-TV movie. It's called The Housewives of the North Pole, and you will hear both of the co-stars, Betsy Brandt and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills co-star Kyle Richards. They're both with us live in our next half hour, so don't you dare go away. Austin, of all the things you did with Zoe, what are you most proud of?
I mean, I'm definitely proud of the realistic portrayal of grief and death and dying. And I feel like I was able to, in some ways, honor my dad and my dad's legacy. And I think that's my biggest takeaway. I'm very proud of that, this Wonder American Pie number that we did at the end of season one that was, I think, very impactful and very impactful for audiences. I'm proud of the response that we get from fans. The show has triggered so much outcry, but even before the cancellation, so much support, and how so many people have found solace in the show and comfort in the show. And I'm just proud that we've, you know, especially season two, we did an entire season during the pandemic, and we were away from our families for so long, and I'm just proud of the work and kind of the bonds that were formed with the cast, and that everybody always came into it with giving 100%, and you know, such a talented, warm group of people that really lent themselves and their hearts to this project.
Mm-hmm. Now, something else, Austin, that you and everybody involved with Story to be proud of, too, is you were the first television series in many, many years, maybe decades, to feature musical numbers in almost every episode. And I remember way back when there was a show on ABC called That's Life, which was about a couple coming together, played by Robert Morse, the Broadway star from How to Succeed in Business I'm Really Trying, and E.J. Peeker, who was a singer, actress, dancer, who was also in the movie Hello, Dolly! With Barbara Streisand. The idea was to do original musical numbers in every episode, and it was taped before the show went on the air. It was on Tuesday night, 10 o'clock. It was on for a year on ABC. And for you to do that kind of program where you have to blend comedy and drama and then a musical number or more in every issue because of the character that Jane Levy had and her ability to sort of sing in her head, if you will. That's really an extraordinary accomplishment, and to do it as ambitiously as you and everybody did.
Thank you. And to also know that we had at least four songs in every episode, four to six, and we had some episodes where we had as many as nine musical numbers in the episode, and we would shoot a new episode of the show every 8 days. So the insane pace of that, and kind of, you know, the whole music and dance element of the show is like two more showrunner jobs on top of just the regular jobs of a showrunner. It was a pretty monumental undertaking, and it's such a credit to everybody involved that somehow we managed to pull it off week after week. But you know, there were definitely times where Mandy Moore and I would look at each other being like, are we insane? What are we actually trying to do here? Just because it's so much so fast all the time.
Mm-hmm. Austin, what is next in your TV career? Do you take some time off and breathe, or do you decide, hey, there's a new contribution I want to make in television, and here's what I want to do?
Well, I have another show that is streaming on Apple right now called Acapulco, and our actual season finale of season one actually drops, I think, this Friday or Thursday night, and I am in the middle of working on potential season two of that as we speak. And I sold another show to Hulu that I'm working on at the moment, and I'm figuring out kind of what next steps are and what are the other projects I want to go out with. But I'm also, you know, holding back a tiny bit just to see the response that the Zoe's movie gets on Roku and what that might also bring. So I'm busy. I'm co-showrunning this other show on Apple right now, but also, you know, hoping there'll be more Zoes and also starting to look towards what's next at the same time. But, you know, we just finished this movie a week ago, and I'm in the middle of Acapulco stuff at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations on Acapulco. I've seen episodes of it. It's wonderful. It's part of Apple's run of new series this year. Eugenio Debes, I believe, is the person you work with. It's also bilingual, English and Spanish in episodes, and it's a wonderful series. It has a great flavor to it.
Thank you so much.
One final question for you. The fact that this is running on the Roku channel, not on a television network, a broadcast network, a cable network, a Netflix, and so on and so forth, Do you think it's waking up content creators to perhaps getting involved with a Roku or a Samsung Smart TV or Vizio, which is now creating channels, in terms of where they want to go to get their programs on? Do you think that this is going to have long-term consequences, not just for you, but for other members of the creative community?
Well, as far as Roku itself goes, I mean, Roku is in something like 70 million homes in the U.S., and I feel like we are also their first original piece of content, and I feel like now that they've maybe dipped their toes into that water, it's possible that they might want to continue to do more original content. I also think that the way people find stuff now, you know, there's so much content out there, be it on network, be it on streaming, be it on YouTube, be it on your phone, that I'd like to believe that the provider, the place where the content comes from, maybe is not as important as it used to be. That if you can just sort of get your thing made and put it out there, that people will find it. And certainly when you're on a streamer or on some of these other places, there's not the same kind of a pressure that exists on network television with the overnight numbers, the fact that overnight numbers even still exist with the way people watch TV now. I just think that there's a lot of opportunities out there. And I think that Roku has been so supportive of the movie and have advertised it so much and have been so just really great partners so far that I kind of feel like in a way it's possible we might get more viewers on Roku watching this movie than anybody who ever watched it on NBC. So I kind of just think that all the traditional rules of the way TV used to be and the way people view things have gone out the window. And I don't think there's any barrier anymore. So whether it's something that's being put on your microwave or, you know, at the gas station or on IMDb Pro or whatever is putting out your latest thing, I just think that, you know, quality material and quality content will rise and that where there's a will, people will find it. So I am way less precious at this moment in time than I would have been 10 or 15 years ago about where can I sell something and what does it mean. I think the more important thing is the process and getting it made, putting it out there, and once it's out there, I think it's kind of, you know, it's always out of your control what happens.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, let's not forget, too, we're starting to see original content on these multi-channel bundles. Tubi is doing a lot of content owned by Fox. You've got Zumo. You've got Pluto TV, which we understand may be getting into it as well. Byron Allen's Local Now is talking about it. So there's a lot of people in the bundle category also that may be following Roku's lead, too. And the smart TVs. I know the smart TV set devices are becoming not only content carriers, but also content makers. As the Roku channel is doing, with Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, it is now available on that service. Available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about both the program and the Roku channel online, go to Roku.com. R-O-K-U, Roku.com. Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, now playing as of today on the Roku channel. And guess what? The story may not be over. And that, to me, would be a great thing. Also to our guest, Austin Weinberg. Austin, congratulations on both this and also on Acapulco on Apple TV Plus. All the very best to you, Jane, everybody involved, Mandy, everybody on the crew. Hopefully maybe more to come in all sorts of ways. It has been a delight to have you on. I'm very thrilled, along with a lot of other people, that Zoe's got the chance to get at least one more shot.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Austin. You and everybody on Zoe have a wonderful holiday season and beyond.
To you as well.
Take care. Austin Weinberg, the creator and executive producer of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist and Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now a comment. About 21 million people saw Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade last Thursday on NBC. That was about 1 million more than last year when it was hit by the pandemic. No crowds outside to see the parade and the floats and the bands and everything. You didn't hear a lot, though, about what CBS was playing at the same time. Their Thanksgiving Day Parade coverage. That's right. They did their Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade coverage, and it seemed that nobody was watching. In fact, for the first time ever, you didn't see not only TV spots, but you didn't see a press release from CBS about the fact that the show was on the air, hosted by Entertainment Tonight's Kevin Frazier and one of his colleagues there. It really feels like now that program is a waste of space for CBS, and that's a shame because way, way back when, in the 1960s and 70s, and I think in the 80s too, CBS used to have that Thursday morning from 10 to noon or 9 to noon Eastern time be very special. It was called the All-American Thanksgiving. Here's how it worked. In addition to running excerpts live from the Macy's Parade, they couldn't say Macy's because NBC has the rights, they also ran parade coverage from Philadelphia live, parade coverage from Detroit live, tape coverage from Toronto, and when Jack Lord was the host of a star of Hawaii 5-0, they would do the Hawaii parade from Honolulu on tape. It was amazing. It was a wonderful alternative what NBC was doing, and it worked well. What surprises me that in the last couple of decades, that hasn't happened. There was nobody said they didn't. The audience didn't want it. It just happened. Well, I have an idea for CBS and for Paramount Plus for next year. Here's what you do. Bring back the All-American Thanksgiving Parade. And the way you do it is this. For the first 3 hours, 9 a.m. to noon, you simulcast on Paramount Plus, and you run the parades from New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Indianapolis, Miami, Nashville, New Orleans, etc., the eastern half of the U.S. of A. And then when the clock strikes noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific, either CBS, if they don't have their NFL game on that time, or Paramount Plus for the following 3 hours, run the parades live from Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, Dallas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Milwaukee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure they have great parades, and Honolulu, too. Great parades, very colorful, et cetera, et cetera. Why shouldn't they get national coverage on stuff like this? And now you have an opportunity to do so with Paramount Plus. So how about it, CBS? Let's get the All-American Thanksgiving Day Parade. It's time to stop wasting that Thursday morning from 9 a.m. to noon and give it value again. And if you don't do it, CBS, make it all Paramount Plus. Why not? It's a great opportunity for Paramount Plus to get bigger and better audiences. So give it a thought, CBS. What do you say? Please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Like, hear what you have to say. And when we come back, we're going to hear what the housewives of the North Pole have to say, the co-stars of Peacock's upcoming movie next week, Betsy Brandt and Kyle Richards. They're both joining us live after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, spreaker.com, and tunein.com. We're going to be reaching over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, BTR brings you Everyday Folks Radio, a different kind of musical program. That's tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Everyday Folks Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Best BTR as always, 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this special two-hour midweek edition of Tomorrow Be Live, coming your way live from New Weather, York on December 1st, 2021. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Glad to have you with us. 47 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our final guest of the day, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For all of you out there who've been thinking, when or when is Bravo or another NBC Universal service going to do a made-for-TV movie featuring the Real Housewives of fill-in-the-blank? It's finally going to happen next Thursday when the Housewives of North Pole, that's North Pole, Vermont, premieres on Peacock. Join us live with an internet radio exclusive, the co-stars of the program, Betsy Brandt and Kyle Richards. Betsy and Kyle, happy holiday season to you. Welcome in.
Happy holidays. Hello?
And Betsy or Kyle, Betsy, where are you calling from?
I don't hear Betsy.
I'm sorry, Betsy. Hello? Where are you calling from? What city? Or Kyle, where are you calling from?
Oh, sorry. I can't hear Betsy at all. I don't know if she's on. I'm calling from L.A. I'm sitting out here in L.A. enjoying this beautiful weather, getting excited about the holidays.
Well, it's great to have you, Kyle. Hopefully, Betsy will join us shortly. Kyle, how long has it been hearing, like, from people saying, get the Real Housewives into a made-for-TV movie? Let's see a scripted version of this. And now you got it on Peacock.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I never heard about a movie. I had always heard about, you know, getting different housewives from different cities together, which is what we did on the Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip. But the movie really is its own thing. I mean, other than the title, you know, that, you know, has housewives in it and two friends have this big blow up. It's a very different world, you know, reality television versus a scripted movie. It's night and day. And I'm happy to say so because it was a lot more fun making a movie about Christmas and that's warm and heartfelt and gets you in the holiday spirit than fighting with people. And there is drama for sure. There's no doubt about that, though.
Absolutely. And I saw the trailer for the film yesterday. I got to tell you, it does have a very different kind of flavor to it between you and Betsy because it's all about these two lifelong friends, it seems, and they blow up at each other over this best holiday house competition in North Pole, North Pole with Vermont, gorgeous looking small town. Everybody's into, you know, trimming the trees and all that. And then boom, you folks just blow up over this competition, like who gets the best holiday house decorating win for the year.
Well, we used to team up together as best friends.
When you first heard about the plot, now go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's, you know, we were best friends who bonded over doing this together and winning together every year. And then they have this huge falling out, and the whole town's talking about it, and it gets blown out of proportion, and they stop speaking to each other, and then they decide to go head-to-head and compete against each other. And then it's like, okay, the gloves are off. And then it takes, you know, the two kids, my daughter and Diana's son, to, you know, try to bring us back together. And it really is just such a touching movie. There, you know, you laugh, you cry. It's a love story, not just a young love, but the love of these two friends. And it's just visually so beautiful. I mean, I am a sucker for a holiday movie, so I'm really excited and proud to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. I believe Betsy Brand has just joined us. Betsy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, and Kyle's here, too. And Betsy, where are you calling from? What, are you calling from L.A. as well?
Yes, from my house. Do you need my address?
Nope, you don't need the address. Sorry about that. We're a family-friendly show. Betsy, we've been on with Kyle for a little bit. What had you interested in doing this first-ever Real Housewives movie?
Well, I myself personally love to watch a Christmas movie, and I thought this year would be the best year to be in one because, you know, we've just had a lot going on the last year and a half, and I was like, yeah, I thought the script was really charming, and I just really, really, really wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. And Kyle, what about this movie led you to think, this is so Real Housewives. This is so right up my alley.
Well, it didn't appeal to me because of that, because it, like I said, you know, it was a film and it's acting, it's very different. So it appealed to me because it had so much heart and soul, and, you know, I'm so excited to be back doing what I love, my first love, which is acting. And it was a good reprieve, actually, from doing reality, quite the contrary. But, of course, because it has drama in it and all of that, hence the title. But it was just, for me, it was like I couldn't be more excited to, you know, take off and go to Utah and make this beautiful, heartfelt film.
Yeah, but those who don't know, prior to your time on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you were a very popular child star in both movies and television.
Yeah, a lot of people who do follow me and have, they know that, but some of the, you know, my other... you know, Housewives fans or followers don't really realize that part of my life, or they kind of forgot about it. So it's very, you know, it's exciting for me to be doing this again and, you know, doing Halloween again and getting back to my roots and what I enjoy most.
Mm-hmm. Betsy, I mentioned it, Kyle. I saw the trailer yesterday, the film, which is running on Peacock next Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's one of their first made-for-TV movies, by the way, since they started over nearly a year and a half now. And one of the things that hits you is it's really outrageous. I mean, this feud between the two of you over who is going to win this the 2021 Best Holiday House competition in North Pole, Vermont, really has some outrageous moments.
Yes. sorry, what was the question? Do I think it's outrageous?
When you had a chance to see the script, and you got the idea about what Ron Alderth is going to do and other people are going to do and so forth, that you get, this really is going to be a very different Christmas holiday movie because of the outrageousness of it, like the craziness of it.
Yeah, I actually I don't think it is that outrageous or that crazy. I think it's just they're upset about other things, and this is just kind of a way to, you know, get those feelings out. And it's just, you know, it's like sometimes we focus on things that we get competitive over that really don't mean a lot.
Well, speaking with Betsy Brand and Kyle Richards, they're the co-stars of The Housewives of the North Pole that premieres 1 week from tomorrow on Peacock. The NBC Universal Mega Content Service available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. And some places, it's also available on your local cable system, too. Both our co-stars join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we're happy you're with us on this 1st of December 2021 as well. Sign up, I'm with you live from New York, New York. 47 degrees at the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guests. Don't be shy. Get your voice going and your phone going, too. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number of it anywhere across the country and around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. We'll use our chat room. It's so simple. Go to SimonApple04. You'll find that at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and the chat room is Get Ready to Wait for You. Betsy, something very interesting to me is that three of the executive producers are all related, and I think they're fun names. Tippi Dabrowski, Neil Dabrowski, Spider Dabrowski. Who are they? Are they all members of the same family? And how did they sort of all come together for both of you?
It's a husband and wife, and their son, right?
Yeah.
I was just messaging with him on Instagram the other day, and he's so excited. It's his Spider's first project, and I'm really impressed because the script is so well written.
You know, Kyle, that's extremely rare. We've had husband and wife situations, mother-daughter situations, father-son situations. In the 14-plus years we've been doing this program, we've had a lot of content creators on this show over the years, including many major ones, like Austin Weinberg, who just had from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist on NBC, which started their Christmas movie on the Roku channel today. We've never had a husband, wife, son all involved in a project.
I know. I've never seen that either. I love that. That's probably why it has so much heart to it.
It's a family affair.
How do you perceive, and I'll start with you, Collins, how do you perceive the heart in it when you get a script or you start shooting a project? How quickly do you perceive heart behind it, soul behind it?
Sorry. Gosh, you know, you have to care about the characters. So if they've done that, then I'm in. And so then when they start to go through any sort of difficulties or, you know, you're invested. Like you have to earn it. And so I think we really did. I think you fall in love with these characters. I think they're very relatable. They're very, you know, in their own ways, they're each down to earth. And I think that then when they have a falling out, it's kind of heartbreaking. And so that's in the script. And I absolutely related to the mom. You know, I have kids. My kids are younger than my kid in the movie. But they grow up and they grow away from you. I get what that feels like. So for me, it was just if it was relatable and if I cared about the people that were going through whatever they're going through. And I feel like in this one it is. And they're also, it's very charming. It's a very, very charming script.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what was it like for you and Betsy to shoot this movie? What kind of atmosphere was it? And by the way, is there a North Pole, Vermont? Were you there actually to do the film there? If not, what served as the scenery for North Pole?
Well, we were in Utah in July in 95-degree weather, but thank you to a huge thanks to an incredible crew and our extremely talented director, Ron Oliver. They created such a magical environment, you know, with the beauty of the movie, with the snow and the decorations and the light that our director had holiday music playing in between takes just to get us all in the mood. It really did create such a beautiful, you know, holiday-ready feeling. So, you know, really set you in the mood.
And, Betsy, that comes through in the movie. In the trailer and some other clips I've seen, you really get that small-town, very close-knit spirit of everybody. And, like, everybody pulling to each other, so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head in agreement. You absolutely do. And I remember, I'm like, oh my God, it was so hot, and I was a little nervous. I'm like, how will it look like Christmas? And Ron Oliver, our, you know, esteemed director, he said, I know how to do this. I've done this before. I know how to do these that I like. I love a Christmas movie too. I know how to shoot them, and I know, like, and we had an amazing design team, and it looked great. I mean, there were some, we had moments where we were shooting it, and it just, it felt magical, and I was so ready for it because, you know, we couldn't have the Christmas that we usually have the year before because of the pandemic, and it was just, it was exactly what I wanted and needed.
I feel like it was so real, we even maybe felt cold at times, even though it was 95 degrees. What do you think, Betsy?
Yeah. How do you do that, by the way, in 95? And by the way, we're not the only people who have been doing, like, summertime recreating a period, because we just had on the CW The Waltons' Homecoming. Last week we had Marcella Blanc, who plays Mariella in that movie, and then we had Alpha Chabet, who plays the grandpa, the little deer role. By the way, the movie did very well, in case you don't know, on CW Sunday night. Had its biggest audience for a single program this year so far, nearly 1 million people saw it. But they had the same thing. They had to deal, they shot the film in July. They shot it in Georgia, also with a small town flavor. And they also had to deal with, you know, how do you recreate the winter of the 1930s on a day, like 90, 89, you know, 85 degree day.
Well, that's what we did. In this little town called Ogden, too. It looked so old. They do a lot of Christmas movies in this town, Ogden. And it was so, you know, the old buildings, old brick buildings, and it really gave you that sense of old world charm, even though it wasn't set, you know, in the old days. It really just, it's kind of a throwback, the town, which was really set a beautiful backdrop for the movie.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I've done the opposite too, where you're shooting in the freezing cold, but imagining that you're really comfortable in shorts and sandals. You know,
that's
so it's
the worst.
Just like, yeah, you just, that's so much worse than what we had to do for this.
Totally agree.
Kyle, what was it like for you to recapture the acting bug through this film?
Well, I never lost it, so it just sort of felt like, you know, going back and shooting the movie Halloween was, you know, my first, you know, movie again, you know, in a while. I've done, you know, little things here and there whilst doing the Housewives these last 12 years, but this just felt like I'm home, you know. I just felt comfortable, like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and I was fortunate that the school was out, so my youngest daughter was able to go with me and to have that one-on-one time with her, because she is the youngest of four. And it was just a beautiful time and a great experience. We even drove to Colorado together from Utah to see the rest of my family and have our little road trip together. So everything across the board was just an incredible experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, Betsy, some actors have made careers now of being in holiday movies, because you have so many of them now on Hallmark Channel, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, Lifetime, ION, you know, you name the network, they're doing them. Was this your first time out doing a holiday movie? And if so, how different was the experience for you compared to other TV jobs you've done?
Honestly, I've done one before. My daughter is 16, and I was pregnant with, so like 16 years ago. And I hadn't lived in LA that long, and to get that movie called Back When We Were Grown-Ups, based on a novel, it was a huge job for me. And Faye Dunaway played my real mom. Blythe Danner played my stepmom who raised me. And Jack Palance played my grandfather, I think in one of the last projects, if not the last project he ever did. And it was, I think, Blythe's first project back to work after her husband passed away. And doing this movie, like after everything we went through with the pandemic, I was so happy to do it. It was so lovely. We had the best time. It was an amazing group to work with. I keep saying, like, nobody gets killed, nobody gets stabbed, nothing horrible happens. And it was really wonderful. I'm like, this is the movie I want to watch, and this is the movie I want to be in right now. And it was an absolute blast. Is that the only thing I want to do for the rest of my career? Absolutely not. But it was really, really fun to mix it up. And then it all came flooding back to me. That movie I did with Blythe Danner, I'm still friends with that cast. I'm still friends with them. We also, like, it just, like, you become a family, and because they're always family shows. And it was really wonderful. And we had such a delightful time. And this felt the same way. We would be done shooting. We would all go and hang out together. It was really, I would do more of these if they asked me any day. Like, I had an absolute blast doing
that. Betsy took me axe throwing, which I had never even heard of before. Apparently that's a thing that I didn't know about.
You're the second person today who's put up axe throwing. Way back at the beginning of our show, nearly 2 hours ago, we had Steve Shannon from Swerve Sports, who said that his new service, which is on the on Roku also, started 2 weeks ago, has at least one program dealing with axe throwing.
Oh my God! I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't know about it.
Yeah. My kids, we went to like a resort ranch in Montana a few years ago. When I dropped my kids off to the kids club, my husband and I went horseback riding. We come back and I said, "Where are my children?" And they were younger then, of course. And they were like, "Oh, they're hatchet throwing in that." I was like, "Really? Like you gave my like 9-year-old a hatchet and let him like chuck it at a tree?" As we do. And so, but now it's a thing. And I was like, I want to go axe throwing. And Kyle, you were so great. I'm like, let's go, let's take the cast. Let's take everybody else. Let's go axe throwing. And you were like, okay. Like, I feel like you would say you're very yes and. Yes and.
I said yes until they told me I had to wear their Renta Crocs. And I'm like, that's where I draw the line. I'm not wearing Renta Crocs.
Yeah. She said that was a bridge too far. That was a bridge too far for her. It was not a deal breaker for me because I really wanted to throw that axe. That was a deal breaker for Kyle.
Mm-hmm. By the way, have you ever seen an old TV show called Daniel Boone? The title sequence has Seth Parker, who played Boone, throw an axe. And then it puts into the title of the show, Daniel Boone, but man, the theme song is playing. You know, Kyle, it's really amazing.
The little girl, that kid used to come to our house. Daniel Boone used to come to our house. He was friends with my sister Kim and Kathy.
Whoa.
Yeah, talk about a throwback. Anyway, back to the movie.
Back to the TV show. Kyle, I want to ask you this. It's really amazing how this Real Housewives franchise on Bravo has gone from being just housewives in one city to all over the United States and beyond. Why do you think this one series has become just an incredible franchise, no matter where the housewives show up?
I think that, you know, people love soap operas. They love an escape. And all of a sudden we had, you know, real people with real problems that they could watch and sort of, you know, maybe feel better about their own problems. Think, oh, God, these people have worse problems than me, and they're what a nightmare. But, you know, for our show, there's also a lot of, you know, lifestyle. People like to have the escape of that. But I think they just like to be, at the end of the day, they just want to be a fly on the wall and see what's going on in people's lives. It's, you know, it's become this crazy guilty pleasure phenomenon that I had no idea would happen. I did not know that when I signed up to do this, I would be here 12 years later, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. No. Betsy, what's next for you? What's the next TV project after this?
I hate being this person, but I can't talk about it. There is something I'm doing in January, but it hasn't been announced and I can't say anything about it. I will say this. I'm incredibly excited about it. And it's, you know, it's a group I'm really excited to work with. Drama.
And Kyle, what about you?
I'm going back to drama.
I'm also starting a new project I'm currently shooting season 12 of The Housewives, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but I'm starting a new project that will be announced soon. I'm in the same boat as Betsy that I'm starting in January as well.
Mm. Nice. And in the meantime, you can catch starting next Thursday, 1 week from tomorrow, The Housewives of the North Pole, the first ever Real Housewives made for TV scripted film. And it runs on Peacock. Mm-hmm. So check your local booth where Peacock is available in your area.
It's just
I'm sorry?
No, it's just Housewives of the North Pole, not real. It's not affiliated.
I know. I know. It's the Housewives of the North Pole, but it's the first real it's a whole thing. Or the lack of a word. What can I say? But anyway, it's on Peacock. That's the NBC Universal Mega Content Service available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Some click on your local cable system. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. The Housewives of the North Pole, it premieres 1 week from tomorrow, December 9th, on Peacock. Betsy Brandt, Kyle Richards, thank you both very much for a delightful half hour. Congratulations on making this film, along with the rest of your cast and crew. Hopefully it does great, and we'd love to have both of you back to talk about where you're at in TV from here.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Both of you from all of us, have a fantastic holiday season. Take care.
You too. Happy holidays.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Betsy Brandt, Kyle Richards, joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, as soon as this program is over in a few minutes, I am going to be heading out the door, and I'm going to be heading to Midtown East in Midtown Manhattan. Why? Because a very special organization that's marking its 30th anniversary this year is doing its first in-person event in quite some time since the height of the pandemic. It's called Dear New York. It's being done by the John A. Reisenbach Foundation. John Reisenbach was an up-and-coming TV executive who, more than three decades ago, was killed on the streets of New York. And in his name, a number of TV executives decided to form a foundation that would help increase the quality of life in this city and maybe in other cities around the country. And over the last three decades, the Reisenbach Foundation has done some marvelous work dealing with everything from the homeless to mental illness to working with police to have better patrols, all sorts of things to definitely increase the quality of life in New York City and in other cities as well. The name of the project is called Dear New York. That's the dinner that's being happening tonight, starting about an hour from now. I'll be there along with some people from Media Village, where I write columns for MediaVillage.com. And I'm thrilled that the honoree this year is John Steinlauf, one of the key ad sales executives at Discovery, Inc. I've known him for many, many decades. He is a terrific person, one of the very best in the business, and I'm thrilled he's being on tonight. So, John, congratulations. And congratulations to the John A. Reisenbach Foundation for what you do. Keep doing the great work. Congratulations also to Discovery, Viacom, CBS, and other corporate sponsors of both this event and the foundation at large. It's great to see in-person TV events back in New York City. If you want more details and if you want to see how what they're doing can make a difference in your city or to make a contribution, go to RisenbackFoundation.org. RisenbackFoundation.org. Thanks again to all of our guests, all of you tuning in. We're back on Friday at 3:30 Eastern Pacific with more great things in the world of television. So be sure to tune in. And the views expressed here are those of the participants. Not that they love the Blog Talk Radio and distributes this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's General Manager, Jay Sonderberg, Head of Content. Website names by Podsite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io, our web coordinator, Guitarist Vakas. Marvin Televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. And remember, if you'd like to get a trial subscription to Audible.com, but for the first 3 months, it's only $5.95 a month. Great holiday gift for you or someone you love. Go to audibletrial.com/televised. With Marvin Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening again. Thank you to all of our guests and all of you for tuning in. We're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Remember, whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe, make it great. And if you have been vaccinated, get to your doctor, find out what your medical situation is, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.